Hello and welcome back to the Brainstorming Basketball Podcast, joined as always by Yosef Nasser, Harrison Liao. Before we started recording, you guys already threw a Kobe White. It wasn't a jab. It was more like a subtle blow.
No, hold on.
No, it was a lob.
It was a lob.
It was a lob.
Yeah, it was a lob.
But
I just feel like this has been like your Twitter account at Armani Buckets basically says the original Kobe White Stan account, and we were just getting a status check because I think that you were first on the Kobe White train, and then Harry and I kind of got on board, and we stayed consistent. I would say, loyalty has wavered a little bit, particularly in that second season before getting firmly back entrenched. But, you know, this was a guy that we thought had Steph Curry potential, and, you know, 3 years in, it's still pretty unclear what his outlook is, but I still believe in him. I think he's going to have a moment as soon as these playoffs against the Bucks. But I guess, Buckets, you're the person who kind of saw the initial vision with Kobe White. Strange season, an influx of guards on this roster. Are we still in on Kobe White?
Yes, and here's the thing, and we've talked about this in private, but if it was any other guard in the month of February 2020 that had the 9 or 10 game sample size that he had, 24 points a game, 9 assists, 5 rebounds, if that's Anfernee Simons, Tyrese Maxey, any young guard, the media is calling him the face of the franchise going forward. And for some reason, that is what set the wheels in motion to me for the Bulls being in the spot they're in now. Because then the next season, they take away his starting job and they give it to Satoransky. And then after that, at the deadline, they have a decision to either tank or to push their chips in the table. And if they tank, they get Kuminga, Jalen Green, even Franz Wagner was their own pick, but they probably end up with a top five pick. They trade for Vooch, which is going to go down as one of the worst trades of the decade. This organization is a mess, guys. It's not that I'm out on Kobe. I'm out on, I think, Bulls Kobe. Like, I don't think that – I think the organization is – and the worst part about this, and I want your guys' feedback on this, is that if you – I got to be careful with what I say. The Bulls fans are, like, a military-minded. If anybody goes against the grain and says, like, this season was not a success, they're like, you fucking piece of shit. How dare you? And I'm like – if we get swept in the playoffs, we're missing one player. Lonzo is a winning player, sure. All those things that they say about him, Harry just made a face. All those things they say about him, I get, I understand. But Lonzo Ball is not the difference between the Bulls being a serious contender and not. They're just not, they're far away. And I don't like the fact that people think that they're close or that this is a success.
What you're saying is that there is a NBA Twitter, Bulls Twitter specifically, groupthink, and if you stray away from whatever that narrative is, your voice is kind of lost in the shuffle. And we've seen that with Kobe White, and we've seen that with whether or not this season was a success. But I just think, like, I was at those 2019-2020 games. You were at some of them, too. Isn't that some type of progress to where – how depressing it was when you knew – that the Bulls were going to be competitive for maybe two or three quarters and then give it away in the fourth or just get the tires blown off. You don't think that there's any positive takeaways from this season? It's like if they get kicked in the teeth by the Bucks, like what was this all for?
The reason we're in the position that we're in this season is because of one man and one man only. Perimeter defense was great. Zach LaVine had a nice season. This was DeMar DeRozan's year to shine. And he's 32 years old. The worse that DeRozan gets, the worse the Bulls are going to get. To say, I agree that it was nice to have a winning season for once in the last 6 years, but DeRozan's window is the Bulls' window. And his window might be gone by, it actually kind of disappeared as the season went along. To me, this team is in win now mode. And if they don't win now, we're back to square one. I want to hear what Harry has to say about if we lose in five games, how would you define a success or a fail in this season, Harry? Is it a five game? What is it to you?
first of all, to contextualize what's happening here, this is really a board meeting, right? We founded a startup, Kobe White Enterprises. Armand, you know, being the majority shareholder, Yosef and I also having, you know, good skin.
Early investors. This is all Buckets. This is all Buckets' vision. Buckets sure. gave it up along the way. We had to kind of hold down the fort and keep that faith yeah. alive. We were eventually able to get Buckets back on board, I think March 2021, and kind of save him. But it's like we feel like the pessimism is wavering a little bit. But I think that we all agree that it's probably going to have to be a different team for Kobe. But like to Buckets' question, I mean, the Bulls.
I think as investors, though, maybe you feel differently about this, but you know, I'm just questioning leadership over here, you know, as far as our Armani Buckets goes.
Oh, my leadership.
Yeah, of this startup, Kobe White, CBE. I'm just saying, I mean, you know, I'm not seeing a lot of campaigning for Kobe anymore. I'm not seeing a lot of, you know, where's the, you know, when he has your random 25 burger. You don't hear that a lot. You know, you hear a lot of 50 burgers, but you don't hear a lot of 25 burgers. When he's like 4 for 7 from three, you know, he's doing the thing. Everybody's dapping him up and everything. I don't know what happened. I mean, I think at this point, to talk basketball, have I given up on the bigger question, the Bulls? Is this a success? Yes and no. I mean, if you had asked me last year after the way the Knicks season went, I know I'm all over the place here, but after the Knicks season went, I would have said yes. Culture change in the right direction, good thing. Where did that get the Knicks this year? Absolutely fucking nowhere. They're probably in a worse spot than they were at the start of last season, right? So if you look at how the Bulls are, I see a lot of similarities, right? You have, like you said, DeRozan. Who knows? Julius Randle had an All-NBA season last year. DeMar DeRozan could be looking at a third-team All-NBA spot this year. You know what I mean? Next year is not guaranteed. This is a what have you done for me lately league. Everybody knows that. So there's no guarantee that the Bulls are going to be competitive next year. And then what happens? Zach LaVine's contract is up for grabs, right? Et cetera. To touch back on the Kobe thing, I'm curious to where you guys have reevaluated his ceiling, or if you have or not, or if you would like to disclose that information, you know, as a shareholder. I know this is a conflict of interest. I've kind of moved the goalposts a little bit in the sense that before, did I think Kobe had a 1% chance of becoming Damian Lillard? I'm embarrassed to say I did. Do I think that has gone down to 0% now? Probably. But do I think that Kobe White could be what Bones Highland is for Denver? Yeah, for sure. And it baffles me why nobody uses him that way as a spark plug, instant offense. You know, somebody that can, I think, help a shit ton of teams. I mean, I'm looking over at these Laker games, and I'm like, oh, cool. Like Austin Reeves had like a triple double.
Malik Monk.
Like I don't understand where these minutes are for Kobe White when he's now. Honestly, not like a veteran, but he's not a rookie in Chicago.
He's up for his rookie contract extension, his rookie extension.
He's an NBA player, and I don't understand what more he has to prove to these coaches that he's had so far.
The red flag, I'm sorry to cut you off, Harry, was when Billy Donovan thought, this is not related to Kobe, but when he benched Daniel Gafford in place of Luke Kornet, that to me should have been like this guy might not see the talent in players, because that is egregious.
And that's horrible.
With Kobe, with, you know, even I'm biased here. You guys said, you know, the stocks are impacting my brain, but I would take Kobe over Ayo Dosunmu. I would take him even long-term still over Lonzo Ball. Lonzo Ball has never played over 63 games in a season. Everybody wants to talk about injury-prone players. I'm sorry, but if you can't stay healthy for the full course of a season, and this is the problem with paying him $21 million, he's not even available when you need him. And it's just the list of problems. It's DeRozan's going to be 33 going into next season, and LaVine is going to be coming off of whatever's going on with his knee and probably going to get the Supermax contract. So it's like we're about to dig ourselves into a hole. And by the time Bulls fans realize what kind of hole has been dug, they're not going to go back and forth with the team. They're just going to quit. They're just not going to show up to the arena. And then they're just going to say, oh, same old Bulls. But if they would have been proactive in seeing the train about to hit them, maybe they could actually change something when there was still time to. Maybe they would actually call for Arturas Karnisovas to say, hey, that Vooch trade really put us behind the eight ball. But instead, they're just going to do what they do. The Bulls, what I've come to understand as a Chicago fan, the Bulls are kind of the afterthought to the Bears, the Cubs, and maybe even the Blackhawks. And that's why I think that they're doomed. They're kind of doomed. I hope I'm wrong, but Yost, what do you think?
Do you guys want to guess how many what percentage of career games Lonzo Ball has played in 5 years?
Ooh.
Out of a possible 390.
Give me an over under on percentage. I get like, let's say 49.5. Like I'll take the over.
Yeah, I'm gonna go over.
More than half his games.
Okay, more than half.
I'm gonna go slightly more than half.
No. I'm telling you, it's more than half. So where in that? Just give me a number.
69%.
69. Close. Bucket. What's your guess?
I was gonna say 65.
64, and change. 64 and change. This is crazy. I mean, this was a hyped prospect coming out of UCLA. And every single year, I mean, like you said, Buckets, he hasn't played more than 63 games. That was in 2019-20, the pandemic year. I mean, it's been kind of a mess from injuries. And we know he's a winning player, but it's like, is this his ceiling? And like you said, I mean, I defended the signing. And I think that you're going to end up being right on this one to where you have Lonzo Ball at $23 million. What is that doing for you? That's, you know, that's a sunk. I don't want to say it's a sunk cost because you can contribute, but it's just, it's not the best allocation of resources. Then you get to Vooch, and then, you know, I mean, Debo ended up being a value contract, but, you know, what's Zach going to get on the open market? I think you're right. This is, it's a weird spot for the Bulls to be in. It's kind of, we talk about avoiding the middle, and that's kind of where the Bulls ended up. That's where they were when they last blew it up with Jimmy, Dwayne Wade, and Rajon Rondo.
Speaking of that team, really quick, I want to point out that the narrative surrounding this team compared to that team is wildly different, although now it's starting, you know, the Bulls fans are souring on this team. But that team is very similar to me to this team in the sense, maybe not the three alphas component, but a team that was kind of hastily put together in hopes of maybe – I don't know what the hopes were. I think that Arturas saved himself by really not specifying what the goal was for this season. But I think internally they wanted to contend. And if they didn't, then I don't know why you have two 30-plus-year-olds in your starting lineup if you're not going to contend. Harry, did you have something you wanted to add?
I forget. But, like, going off of what you just said, like, then what's the strategy then? And, like, I say this kind of playing devil's advocate because – you know, whether or not we want to say this is right, everybody kind of lauds moves that maybe the Vooch thing did have some question marks to it when it happened, right? But if we're talking about just going all in and hastily putting together a team, I can point to five different scenarios in the last 5 years where people have been like, no brainer, every GM should do that. Case in point, the Clippers, right? You know, Kawhi, Paul George, great. Everybody said, okay, cool. They gave up their entire future, leveraged everything they had for the next 10 years, and just said, we're going all in. What if it doesn't happen, right? Kawhi's probably not coming back in the playoffs. Paul George looks amazing. We'll see what happens with this team. But realistically, any team that's in the play-in is not going to win a championship. And the goal of this team was multiple championships, right? We all said that was a great idea. Look at the Sixers this year, right? Everybody kind of, us included, all three of us, let's just be honest here. I think we all, at first glance, were like, oh, all in for Harden. At the price that they gave up, it makes a lot of sense. No matter what you think about Harden, at the time, we were like, it makes sense. I mean, at that price, you have a contract who is an absolute albatross, is literally not playing basketball, and they went all in. Now, you can look back at it and be like, should Daryl have taken the Halliburton and change deal? Should he have gone like a more diversified portfolio to continue like the stock analogy? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but it seems like the same thing keeps happening. And you could say this about the Bulls too, where the Vooch thing, I mean, you had a lot of respected people around the league saying like, hey, like it's a gamble, but it's a smart gamble. It could backfire, which it has, but it was at the time, you know, I think majority people, you included, Armand, you were stoked about it. Majority of the people thought, hey, smart move. I mean, this is a guy that is a modern NBA big, can space the floor, should realistically fit in any situation. So I don't know what the answer is. If you look at the top of both of the conferences, right? The Heat, Celtics, Bucks, you have kind of these bastions of like homegrown talent. Guys that we drafted, Bam Adebayo, Giannis, Jason Tatum, and it's paying dividends. But you look at the other side of the conference and you have the Suns who made a similar move. They said, fuck it, all in. Chris Paul, we need to maximize Devin Booker's timeline here, you know. So
but
I don't know.
It's that same formula though, where it's like a lot of homegrown talent, you get to a certain threshold. And I think that's what Buckets is saying that he wish or would have liked to see with the Bulls, to where, like, what if we had kept Lauri Markkanen? What if we had kept Wendell Carter? What if we had had Franz Wagner, for instance?
Yeah.
And then Debo on top of that, to where it doesn't have to feel so immediate. But if, you know, for some reason you do have, you know, you've got those extra years of developmental upside plus, like, something that you can do potentially now. I think the doubling down with the Vooch and then the DeRozan, but then I've heard people say, do the Bulls get DeRozan without Vooch because of their connection at USC? So I don't know. I guess the only thing that we can say is safe to say is that Debo is not in Bucket's top five MVP votes. Well, is that correct?
This is going to sound so blasphemous. DeMar DeRozan has had an incredible season. I've been happy to have him on the Chicago Bulls. Would it have been the worst thing in the world? Let's say Vooch and DeRozan were a package deal. Would it have been the worst thing in the world if we didn't get DeRozan and we were just young and bad?
What's interesting is that, like, anybody could have had DeRozan. Like, there was talks about him going to the Lakers for the mid-level, and it's just when you look at what Fournier got with the Knicks compared to what DeRozan got with the Bulls, it's almost laughable. So I do think the fact that he's on a good contract and he had such, like, a career season, basically, like, he does have some good trade value. So it's good from that aspect if you can turn him into something. But I think that the Bulls are going to double down and go even more all in on this team, which is I don't think they've got beyond a second round ceiling, unless we're talking about some breakout that we're not seeing from like a Patrick Williams or a Kobe White.
I think you pose an interesting question, Armand, of like, okay, is it realistically, as a fan of the team, would you rather be the Magic or the Bulls right now? Right? Would you rather be at the very bottom of the conference, or would you rather be six and kind of floundering in no man's land, both of which are miserable? Like, let's just spade a spade, right? I think the ultimate lesson here is that, like, unless you're contending for a championship, it kind of sucks. It just does. Like, that's just the truth. Whether or not, like, I mean, I'm sure you feel the same way, Yost, about the Sixers right now, where it seems like let's be clear. The Sixers could win a championship for sure. I would still include them in a contender group.
But, you know what? I want to add a qualifier to what you just said. It kind of sucks, but when you have that franchise guy like a Joel, and you can get behind him, like someone that you believe in, and I think this is a perfect segue to our MVP conversation, because you've grown with this guy. And I think that one of the things Buckets has had an issue with was that, like, he kind of wanted to grow with these young Bulls and hopefully find that Joel in a draft to latch on to. Maybe RJ is becoming that guy. I don't know how you feel about the Knicks. Because you built that equity over time. Kristaps was that guy for you before that situation kind of unraveled there. But it sucks until you have a guy, and then when you have a guy, you have hope.
I agree. I mean, last thing I want to say about this, I wrote an article about this a while ago for the Knicks wall. This is when the summer of KD and Kyrie, when New York had literally, like an incel, talked themselves into the hot girl choosing them when there was no basis for it whatsoever. But anyways, I remember that summer there was all this talk about KD, Kyrie, like, what's going to happen? And I felt very, like, turned off by the idea. Not of having KD and Kyrie and contending for a championship. That's fucking great. But what I had thought was, like, compare, like, the Warriors fans that I know, every single one of them values the chip pre-KD than the chip post-KD, right? Like, there's something immensely, again, this is from the fan perspective, not from a team-building perspective. There's something immensely rewarding about, like, seeing a Joel Embiid blossom into an MVP and getting behind him, or having the chance to have seen, you know, a Kobe White become Steph Curry, you know, or having a chance to see RJ Barrett and do all these things, which is why I think that, like, this modern NBA, where there's so much player movement, there's so much free agency, is such a huge, huge part of not just the offseason, but the regular season now too. that like there is something lost behind that. There is like this gratifying like end of the rainbow. You get your pot of gold that like doesn't really happen anymore.
I completely agree. I think it has to do a lot with the instant gratification society that we live in. But we have spent a lot of time discussing the Bulls, although I think that that was a very productive discussion. I want to get into, let's get into the awards race. The first award that we have to get to is the MVP award. And I want to turn the table over to our resident Sixers fan, Yosef Nasser, to make his case for Joel Embiid. First of all, we haven't actually discussed who your MVP is, so I don't even know if you're leaning one way or another, but go ahead. The floor is yours with the MVP for Embiid.
I struggled with this, and I see the cases for all three guys, and it makes me it's a little bit weird. We all understand Embiid, Jokic, and Giannis are three great players. In my mind, and I think in everybody's mind, they're the three top candidates for this award based on what they did this season. I don't feel like you have to disparage any of the other players to make a case for one guy. I think the thing that's interesting with MVP is how do you define what an MVP is? And so winning goes into the equation, team success goes into the equation, statistical success, analytics have woven their way in. Narrative, is it the most valuable, literally the most valuable? Is it the guy with the highest Raptor or Warp or whatever? Is it, you know, the guy with the best?
Definitely not that.
The thing is that people have made that case, you know, with you know, definitely not that. We agree on that. I think that for me, and maybe it's biased, maybe it's not, but it's just, I don't know how you can ignore narrative in this, where the Sixers meltdown in the playoffs was the story of the 2021 playoffs. It was the story. Ben Simmons not playing, it cast a massive shadow over not only this season, but the outlook of the season or the Sixers moving forward. And the Sixers have been in this place of turmoil when you look at Colangelo, Markel Fultz, Ben Simmons, Elton Brand, the Tobias Harris trade, Jimmy Butler getting him and then having to move off of him because we picked Ben over him. The fact that Joel stood in the face of all of that, stood in the face of the Ben Simmons situation almost defiantly and said, you know what? No, like I'm one of the best players in the league. This team is not going down as long as I'm in charge. As long as I'm the top player, I'm going to continue to add to my game. I'm going to continue to get better. That's powerful to me. We've seen the stats, 30 points a game. This hasn't happened for a center since Moses Malone, almost 40 years. But it's more than that. It's just that his presence like gives the Sixers credibility. And I get that the other guys do that. And maybe there's a piece of this where the other guys have gotten their awards and it's just, it'd be cool to see Joel get rewarded. I get how special Jokic is. Like, if you want to talk about literally perhaps the most valuable because the rest of his team is depleted, Jokic is there. I mean, if you want to talk about literally like who's the best player pound for pound right now in the league, you could say Giannis is there, but like, how do you ignore what Joel has done in the face of everything the Sixers have been, that what he's done? Because I think what Ben Simmons has done this year is disgusting and concerning. Criminal. In terms of, what'd you say?
Criminal.
Sports is about competing. This guy quit. This guy holds the Sixers accountable for his own failures. Joel had every excuse to do just that, and he didn't. Joel uplifted guys like Tyrese Maxey. Before the Harden trade, that storm cloud hanging over, the Sixers were in the mix just like they are now. Harden doesn't look the same as, you know, he was 2 or 3 years ago. But guess what? The Sixers have a chance because of this guy. Joel's my guy, man, and it's maybe it's biased. Maybe it's not. Like, he deserves to be in the conversation, but the defiance with which he attacked this season and didn't let the Sixers squander uplifting a Tyrese Maxey, a Matisse Thybulle, continuing to improve his game, leading the league in scoring. I think there's enough there to give him the award. I'm sure that you guys have other thoughts, but that's where I'm at. Like, what he's done is enough to me to where I can't move off of him. I can't move off of my guy for, you know, Jokic who's special and Giannis who's special, but Joel is different. It's just like maybe how you felt with D Rose back in 2011, Buck. It's just, I've got to stick by Joel.
I think for me, it's this award this season, I can't get upset at anybody going any direction.
And neither can I, to be clear. Neither can I.
With those top three and how good each of them has been, I really have had a hard time deciphering exactly what the word valuable means, exactly like you said. And I think that there is this notion to ignore narrative, and I think that that's foolish, like you said, Yost, because narrative is a huge part of what's going on. With that being said, for me personally, I would go Jokic, Embiid, and Giannis in that order. And we've all heard the same regurgitated stuff, but I really do think that the fact that he didn't have Murray and MPJ and the Nuggets, again, they're the sixth seed, but compared to the Bucks and the Sixers, they're not too far behind where it's like the record does not negatively impact it for me.
Well, it's like a two-game difference, right? Win-loss-wise? Yeah,
I believe so. The thing is, those guys that Jokic has played with, to me, they really are role players. He's surrounded by guys that in any other circumstance and situation, if you take Jokic off that team, they're one of the worst teams in basketball. And that's not to say that it wouldn't be the same way for Giannis or Embiid. That's why this is, to me, personally, the hardest MVP race that I can remember. I would go Jokic, but I would love to hear what you think, Harry.
It's funny. I think a week or two ago, I had done this like list. I was like, I want to figure out who I think is MVP. And I had it Giannis, Embiid, Jokic. And I think now I have it flipped, basically. I have Embiid, Jokic, Giannis. I don't think that you can't really discount Embiid for the Harden thing. You know what I mean? I think a lot of voters are. Where like they're like, I think a lot of what I've heard on like podcasts and stuff over the last couple of weeks has been like, look, Embiid got Harden at the trade deadline. Jokic is stuck with this fucking G League team. And I just think that discredits what Embiid did for the first, whatever it was, like 50 plus games of the season. Like, I don't think people, it's weird, recency bias. I don't think people remember what kind of lineups they're rolling out there. We all know what Tyrese Maxey has been this year. But if you watch those games, like if you actually, you know, and I know you guys do, when we watch those games, it was like everything was Embiid. I mean, you're talking about a guy now who has developed into a wonderful playmaker when teams double him out of the post, you know, creating offense in ways that he hasn't before. Like you're talking about, Yost, like this guy has improved, stepped up his game in multiple aspects. And the reason why I think I knocked Giannis down a peg over the last couple of weeks is I think the Bucks have actually let their foot up off the gas. Their defense has been highly suspect for the better part of this last stretch of the season, when seeding is somewhat important. And you could say maybe they did that to dodge Brooklyn in round one. But, I mean, you know, if we're splitting hairs here, like all that stuff matters. And I think Jokic, actually, if you look at Jokic's season, he's probably having the best season of his career. But it's not too different from last season, right? I mean, I know last season he won the MVP. But it's just a tighter race in general this season. And I do – I agree with Yost. I think that the improvement Embiid has shown – of a player of that caliber is just like a gargantuan achievement. And to me, that's the whole difference here, is that can you go from like a superstar to single-handedly making your team a contender for a championship? I think that alone is enough value to make someone the MVP.
For me personally, I don't have anything left to say about the MVP race, because I feel like this race has been so deeply covered. But if you have something else that you would like to, either of you have something else that you would like to input.
Who's your 4-5?
My 4-5, I think I would go Luka and Tatum.
Interesting. What about I went Tatum Booker.
Okay. Yos?
I think Luka and Booker.
Is there anything else that you guys want to touch on with this MVP race? Because, again, just personally, there has been so much my brain can't handle, like, processing anymore. It's so razor close. And
yeah,
if any of them win, some of the media awards got leaked today. I don't know how reliable that leak was, but I think it was legitimate. It looks like Jokic is going to win, and it looks like it might be a little bit of a bigger gap than it should be, and that's just ridiculous to me. If anything, this would be the year that it would be neck and neck.
The only thing I have to say to cap this MVP thing is that how crazy is it that that Nikola Jokic might be a 2-time back-to-back MVP when on the night he got drafted, as he was getting drafted, they didn't even show him. He was on the ticker at the bottom, and it was a Taco Bell commercial. Like, that's so insane to me.
I didn't know that, to be honest. But that
you didn't
is,
know that?
I didn't know that about
that's
you.
It's a crazy story. Talk about – I don't even know if you can get worse for a commercial. I hate Taco Bell, as you guys know. That's disrespectful. I remember learning that because, like, I'm a big draft nut. I was seeing – I like to look up on YouTube, and it's like, oh, what was the moment where Jokic got drafted? What were they saying about him? What were his highlights looking like? And it's like – you can't find anything. It wasn't there. So I think the only thing that I have to say is that I think that even if Giannis didn't have two MVPs and Jokic had one MVP, if those guys didn't have those MVP awards, I think I would still be on Embiid based on what I had said. And if what you're saying is true, Jokic is a tremendous player. I think that all three of these guys are going to go down as top 30, 35 players if their careers continue to progress the way that we've seen them progress. And I don't know, all three of those guys give their teams a chance to win a title. So Embiid is my guy, but all three guys are qualified for sure.
What we're going to do next is we're going to go and do our top three for each individual award. Let's start with Yos, if you have your top three for the sixth man of the year.
Man of the year. So Kevin Love is number one. Just the fact that he was able to revitalize his career. I know the numbers aren't typical of what you look at for a sixth man, but I just feel like this guy on a permanent basis was Kevin Love. And it's just early in the season, you love those Cavs teams, or you loved watching the Cavs Buckets. Obviously the injuries have compromised what they've been able to do, but I think that the fact that Kevin Love was seen as kind of an albatross contract, did he have anything left in the tank? And then he was able to go back in the time machine and basically add legitimacy to that second unit. I think that he's number one for me. Tyler Hero is number two for me. I just think that the progress that he's made, you know, over the course of his career, he's just an absolute bucket. And he fits more of the traditional, what you expect to see from a sixth man in terms of, like, you know, Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams, these guys who score a lot of points off of the bench. He's more of that traditional pick for a sixth man of the year. And then I think that Phoenix has to weigh into this conversation with a lot of these awards. When you talk about coach of the year, we mentioned Book for MVP. I think Cam Johnson, his consistency off the bench, just a guy who can shoot it. He's versatile. He can defend. He's more along the Love side of things in terms of just like a good team player.
Shout out to his little brother in the NCAA final.
Yeah, that was crazy. Where, you know, he, so I said that guy looks like a lot like Cam Jones, because I didn't know that, you know, he had a brother on.
That's him barfing on the court.
Yeah, his name is Donovan, I think. His real name, they call him Puff, though, because he likes Cocoa Puffs. But yeah, Cam Johnson, I think that he's my number three on the list.
What about you, Harry?
I'm good with that. I got nothing to add. Chalk.
I got Hero number one. I got Kevin Love number two, and I'm gonna go with Alex Caruso at number three.
I see. Didn't know.
He only played half the season because of Grayson Allen. But I can't take that away from him, because that was a freak. That was a dirty play, and he only started 18 games. And I think that he had a huge impact on that Bulls team. In terms of coach of the year, Harry, do you have your top three?
Yeah. Sorry. Let me pull it up real quick. I went, Monty Williams first. I think Phoenix has been the gold standard all year, and I think they came into the season with a clear identity of how they wanted to play on both sides of the ball. And a lot of that does go to the coaching staff. Obviously, a lot of that goes to the players. Second, I had Ime Udoka. I thought that, you know, once Boston kind of figured out their defensive switching scheme, you know, allowing, I think, Robert Williams to do what he does best, you know, keeping him as the low man like 90% of the time, double switches, triple switches, you know. Obviously, they have great personnel. Pretty much everybody in that team is an excellent, excellent team defender. But I thought what Ime did this year was great, you know, and it was something that his boss, Brad Stevens, could not do for a long time. At number three, I had Mike Budenholzer. I think when I watch Milwaukee now, they have an offensive identity that I think just become a lot stronger over the past a few seasons. You know, I think they really hone in on a lot of double screens. They kind of get their guys moving off these double screens quickly, whether that's like someone starting baseline and then curling all the way up to the top of the key, and then people are just moving in motion. It allows them to use their size really well. It kind of empowers Brooke Lopez to like do a bunch of different things, you know, now that he's come back, you know, spot up from the corner. I don't know. There's a bunch of different actions that they get out of their set actions that I think Budenholzer doesn't get enough credit for as an X's and O's guy. And then honorable mention, Steve Nash.
Wow. I don't know if that was a joke or not, but Yos, what is your top three for coach of the year?
I think you have to start with Doc Rivers.
Definitely.
I'm just joking. I like Monty, Eric Spoelstra, and then I was debating on Udoka and Taylor Jenkins. How do you see that, Harry? Was Taylor Jenkins a consideration, or you look at that as more of a – they've got a lot of great personnel. Ultimately, Udoka and Bud, like, they're a step or two above Taylor. What do you think about that?
I had my 4-5. I had Taylor. Coach Jenkins, I think what he does is great. He keeps it simple, which nobody gets credit for, but I think he basically took a look at his personnel, like you said, great personnel, but he's like, dude, we have a shit ton of athleticism, shit ton of youth, push the ball. When I watch Memphis, like, they just push the ball down your fucking throat, and then on defense they're all over the place, spearheaded by Jaren Jackson, right? And I think that you have to give the coaching staff credit for that. Don't overcomplicate things, like, keep it simple. And the Nash thing, you know, I was actually serious about this. They've obviously slipped into a tailspin. But I thought that what he does X's and O's wise, I think is actually, like, severely, severely underrated. I was watching a game of Brooklyn, like, a while ago. KD and Kyrie were playing. And KD caught the ball. Kyrie and KD started left wing together. I wrote this down, actually. KD set a back screen for Kyrie. And Kyrie can flip it into a flare screen. Or sorry, KD can flip it into a flare screen in case the D walls off the paint. And Kyrie can just pop out to the corner. Kyrie dives into the paint. Someone sets a flex screen for him or an elevator screen. I can't remember. But he pops out to the top of the paint. And he does what he does best. Catches, turns, and shoots a fadeaway three going full speed. And there was basically, I looked at this play and I was like, dude, Steve Nash figured out a way to kind of use the things that KD and Kyrie are best at, right? In this specific action, KD's looking at an empty left side of the floor. What if he wants to just drive baseline, which he's great at? You know, he's got that pull-up midi. And I just thought, like, that's hard to do. Like, it's not easy to take two superstars who are both, you know, ball dominant, need a lot of, you know, KD's not a high usage guy, but both ball dominant, need the ball in their hands to maximize what they're doing. And to have, like, an action that uses both of them in harmony to, like, to great effect. I don't know. I guess it's easier to, like, see this than me butchering it right now in audio form. But, like, I don't know. I think what Steve Nash does, X's and O's wise, was actually pretty smart. He's been dealt a tough hand, in my opinion.
How do we feel about an honorable mention for Jay Kidd?
No, true.
I like that
one. Ironically.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's done a great job.
The job that he's done with their defense is sensational. I think that I was surprised that neither of you had Taylor Jenkins as your winner, because that's who I would go with as the winner, specifically because of the overall record, but the record without Ja is just incredible. And then besides that, I would go number two would be Monty Williams. Actually, sorry. Another guy I was surprised that you guys didn't mention is number two would be Bickerstaff of the Cavs, because
that's a good one.
They've gone through so much turmoil all season, and it never ended. Their turmoil literally, they've had injuries.
Still going.
It's still going.
Jared Allen.
Yep, he's going to be out for the play for the first playing game at least, and they've just dealt with a lot. And the way that Vegas had them, I think projected to win 28 or 29 games. They blew through that. They won 44 games. They would have been in the top six had they not dealt with so many injuries. And then Monty Williams would be number three, which is kind of insane to say because they've been so incredible and ahead of the pack. But let's get on to the next award, Defensive Player of the Year. Yost, do you have a top three for that?
I think Jaren is number one for me. I get the arguments that people have made against him. He only plays 27 minutes, but he's really allowed them to do what they do defensively in terms of, I think the issues that he had when he was younger, earlier in his career, he's in year four right now, is that he was extremely foul prone and he wasn't a very good rebounder. So it's like he couldn't anchor. He was like an ideal small ball five, but he didn't have the ability to anchor the team as a small ball five, you know, based on the way his talent suggested he could. But just his ability to switch, his ability to anchor the paint, you know, I think he leads in blocks and steals. He's playing, even though he's not playing on a permanent basis, as many games as, you know, other players are, he's still, you know, up there in total minutes. And, you know, he stayed healthy this year. I think that this is the year he's put it all together. Number two is Rudy Gobert. I tell you guys, when he gets inducted into Springfield, I'm putting down everything I'm doing, and I'm going to that induction ceremony, and I hope you guys will join me. I mean that sincerely. I'm going to
live. Say less, I'm there.
Yeah, like.
We should bring croissants.
Oh, yeah, croissants, absolutely. And I really like Mikal Bridges as my number three. I just think that having that guy on the wing, I know that post-defense, interior defense, it's the anchor of your defense. But when you have a guy that's – you can put on so many guys, and he – just the way that he thinks the game, and, like, you know, I was listening to him talk. I think it was might have been Russillo's podcast. He was talking about just his approach to guarding Luka, to where, like, he knows that he's going to get screened. He's going to, you know, be switched on and off of different players. But it's just like – I think that he just is very savvy in terms of knowing where he is on the floor, who he has the ability to close out on, who he has the ability to impact based on his length. And it's just like when you have him to throw on guys, you know, to start off, but then like he's a factor both on and off the ball. I think and Marcus Smart as well, you know, he's terrific down the stretch as well. I think that I would go Jaren, Rudy, and Mikal Bridges with the hat tip to Marcus as well.
I have the same list, just I have Mikal 2 and Rudy 3. Harry, what about you?
I had a very different list, actually. This guy's only played 56 games. I just looked it up. But I had Bam Adebayo number one. I just think he's the best switch center I've ever seen. He can legitimately guard point guards. You know, the advanced stats are out there, whatever. You know, people score not a lot of points against him in isolation switches. And I think the modern NBA defenses are designed around having a very gifted center that can guard some smaller guys, and Bam, to me, is like the archetype of that. Number two, I had Robert Williams, another guy who hasn't played that many games this season. He's played 61. But I just thought, you know, this guy's the anchor for the best defense in the league. They've been the best defense in the league for 40 games now. You know. Three, I had Giannis, but I don't know. I did this a while ago. I think I would probably put Jaren in that spot now. So I went Bam, Rob, Jaren.
I like it. Rookie of the year. This one I'm very interested to see because I think it's going to be similar to the MVP race. You could go a lot of different ways, and I don't think there's
– Why don't you start?
Wrong answer. So for me, I would go – this is interesting. I would go Scottie Barnes as the rookie of the year. And fair or unfair, the Cavaliers' defense, I think the argument for Evan Mobley – was the Cavs defense as a whole. But when Jared Allen went down, the defense plummeted. And so to me, it looked like Jared Allen is the main reason, strongly the main reason why the Cavs defense was what it was. So that kind of swayed my rookie of the year race. And in fact, no, I'm going to stay Mobley 2 and Cade 3. But Cade, if either of you has Cade as your winner, I wouldn't hold it against you because he was so incredible. I would say, I don't know what the statistics say off the top of my head, probably the last, 50 games of the season, because he did get off to kind of a slower start.
Since the All-Star break, he's been at 21-6-6.
Incredible. What do you guys have? Yost, what do you have?
I think Scott, I've got your same three. Scotty, because I think Mobley is probably going to win it based on the way that he started the season, but Scotty really surged down the stretch, winning team, so disruptive defensively. I don't know if he is more impactful or if it just feels like he's more impactful, but just the way that he can rip and run, make plays on the break, the intensity, he's playing at 100% all the time, the size, he's such a menace. Cade, I can't even – he's carrying the biggest load, so I get why you said, I wouldn't even be mad if you had him at number one. It's just the sample size, I guess. I feel like Scotty, if you're looking at the breadth of the season, Evan and Scotty were kind of at that level where Cade and Jalen Green really emerged post-All-Star break into saying, okay, who's first of all, this is an outstanding rookie class. It's who's going to be the best player in this class? That's the conversation they entered to. But if we're talking about rookie of the year full season, I think it's between Scotty and Mobley. And I think Scotty did enough to pry it away from Mobley down the stretch.
I actually went Cade. I went Cade, Scotty, Mobley for the reason that you just said. I just think he has the hardest job out of the three. But whatever. I mean, we don't need to get too far into it. I do want to give a special shout out to Zaire Williams, who I was completely out on when the draft happened. But, you know, when I watch Memphis, every time I watch Memphis, Zaire has two or three plays where I'm okay, you know, the young kid is earning his burn out there.
I want to get – that was a good shout-out, by the way, Harry. I want to get into the All-NBA teams now, first team, second team, and third team. And I want to see what kind of disparities, discrepancies we have between the three of us. Let's get started with our first team All-NBAs. Let's go round table and see what we have. Harry, who's on your first team All-NBA?
I went Luka, Devin Booker, and my guards. Then I went Giannis, Jokic, and Embiid. So I have all the MVP guys.
Same as mine. Yos?
I have Tatum instead of Booker.
Okay. Second team. Harry, who's on your second team?
I went Steph, Ja for my guards. And then I went Tatum, Kevin Durant, and then Karl Anthony Towns.
Okay. Yost, what about you?
I've got Ja, Booker, DeRozan, Durant, Karl Anthony Towns.
Ja, Booker. Say it one more time. I'm sorry.
Ja, Booker, DeRozan, Durant, Karl Anthony Towns.
Okay. I'm going to go with Ja, Trae Young at the guards. I'm going to go.
Second. Wow.
Yes. There was a big push I saw literally in the past like 48 to 72 hours of Trae Young for first team. I couldn't go that far, but his numbers this year, I had to.
Amazing. But they're terrible.
They're 4 games over .500. They're not great, but like the thing with me is like when I look at that and I compare it to like the Nets and Durant is obviously incredible. The Nets were one game better. So that's kind of how I viewed it. But I understand. I understand the frustration.
Yeah, but the Nets when KD was playing, like when he left in when he got hurt, they were a one seed. Like I think their record with him is like way better than whatever win percentage Atlanta is with Trey this year.
You make very valid points, and now you're making me rethink the whole Trey thing. But I'm going to stick to my guns. Trey Young, that team this year has been so dysfunctional. I don't know what happened. They have dealt with a lot, and Trey, his defense is what it is. But without him this season, they are the Charlotte Bobcats to me. Like, they are terrible. So I'm going to go Trey and Ja. Center is Karl Anthony Towns, and the forwards are Tatum and goodness, who was my other forward? I'm sorry, Durant. I'm sorry, Durant and Tatum. Third team, Harry, who's on your third team?
I went Chris Paul, DeMar DeRozan, and then for the front court, I went Jimmy Butler, LeBron James, which honestly I didn't feel great about. And then at center, I went Bam.
Okay. Yos?
Chris Paul, Steph, LeBron, Siakam, Rudy.
I like it. I'm going to go Steph Curry, Donovan Mitchell, Pascal Siakam at the center, LeBron James, and who am I forgetting? DeMar DeRozan would be the last forward spot. Did everybody have Pascal? That was the one that was very.
I didn't.
Okay.
I went Bam instead of Pascal.
Okay. That was the one that I was very curious about because at the All-Star break, everybody wanted to reward a Raptor and everybody kind of decided.
It's Fred.
Fred. Yeah.
And Pascal's amazing.
At the time, the Fred stuff was understandable, but the way Siakam has played in the second half of the season, it's going to be interesting to see if he makes an All-NBA team because I think he's right on that cusp. In terms of the play-in tournament, it's been a hotly debated topic of whether this should even be a thing. But honestly, personally, I don't know about you guys. I even like the Pelican-Spurs matchup, but I think we got some good matchups this year. Let's start with the Eastern Conference, Brooklyn and Cleveland. How are you guys feeling about that? Yos, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling like you've kind of alluded to it. Cleveland is pretty depleted. These two teams played a week or two ago, and Brooklyn won pretty handily. I'm going to go with Brooklyn in this matchup.
Same with me. I think that the Nets, if Jared Allen was playing in this game, it would be really, really interesting. And Cleveland could definitely still, I think, pull off the upset. But Harry, how are you leaning?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Nets, I mean, anybody who says otherwise is kind of, you're going off of a gut feeling. There's no evidence to show that the Cavs at this point, with what they've gone through this season, are a better team than the Nets. That being said, I mean, could the Nets lose? Yeah, I mean, their defense is horrible. It's atrocious. Like, in must-win games, they're giving up like 130 points, you know, down the stretch. I mean, they've had 10 or 11 must-win games in a row with KD and Kyrie available for all of them. And their defense is just completely horrible. It's I think, probably one of the worst defenses out of any team that's in the playoff hunt. So, yeah, I mean, it's totally possible the Cavs could beat them. But that being said, I have the Nets.
Atlanta and Charlotte. Yos, how are you feeling about that one?
That's an interesting one. I think I'm going to take Atlanta in that one.
Okay. I personally, the way that LaMelo Ball has been playing recently has me very intrigued. It seems like he is taking a mini step in terms of his stardom. He had 24 points the other night in the first half against the Bulls. This is the thing with LaMelo. They were blowing the Bulls out, but he didn't score the rest of the game, which is interesting. I feel like he has a tendency to kind of do that, but he has, to me, with his three-point shooting, it has taken him a slight step above. I'm going to go Charlotte.
Yeah, I have Charlotte too. I think both these teams actually play a similar style of basketball, at least in the regular season. They like to run. They like to push the ball. Trey loves to get out in semi-transition, but the Hornets play that same style, and I actually think they have more guys that are equipped for it. You know, whereas the Hawks, you know, I think one big reason for the Hawks' disappointment this year, we brought it up earlier, but just to throw a name out there, I think guys like Danilo Gallinari, you know, they have a lot of guys that there's a lot of money attached to. You know, a lot of their team building has been around. They just can't play the style of basketball that Trey kind of wants to play anymore. Whereas you look at the other flip side of the coin, I think the Hornets have a ton of guys that just love to play at that pace. They love to push the ball. Terry Rozier, you know, Miles Bridges, obviously. Plumlee, you know, Plumlee is one of the best, I think, rim-running bigs in the league. You know, I think styles make fights, and I think the Hornets are better equipped for this fight.
So, Harry, for you, Charlotte and Cleveland, who advances to the eighth seed?
I have Charlotte. Okay. But I could see Cleveland. I could see Garland putting in an all-time performance, and then Mobley kind of showing, you know, what he's made out of. We'll see if Jared Allen is available. But I have Charlotte.
I'm gonna go Cleveland. I think that their good season, the home crowd in that game, is gonna help them prevail. Yos, you would have Atlanta and Cleveland. Who do you have in that?
And game? I'd have Cleveland winning over Atlanta in that.
Interesting. So we got two. So we all got Brooklyn. We got two Cavs and one Hornets as the eighth seed. That was an interesting experiment. Let's do the Western Conference. Minnesota and the Clippers. Yos, where is your head at with that one?
You're going to love this, Buckets, because I think that the underdog Clippers is one of your favorite teams of the past 15 years. And I know that you're not as high on the Wolves as other teams are. Quietly, the Clippers have won, I think, five straight games. Is that correct? Yeah, five straight games.
Five straight.
Paul George is back. Norman Powell is back. This team made the Western Conference Finals last year, and nobody's talking about them. And I get Kawhi was there for the first piece of that stretch, but the team that took Phoenix to six, plus Norman Powell, is intact. I don't know if the Timberwolves. They've been a fun story. They've been a nice story. PG is one of the most underrated players of this generation. I think it's because of the playoff P, you know, he's just so smooth, man. I feel like the Clippers have kind of, I was wondering, because I was prepared for the Wolves to beat the Clippers in this matchup before I realized Paul George was coming back, and then you see how they've been playing. I think the Clippers advance, and I don't know how far they can push the Grizzlies at two, but it'd be the Grizzlies at two. But that's going to be fun, man. That's going to be a sneaky, fun series. I've got the Clippers beating the Wolves.
I'm with you. And I think that this has the potential to be, I don't want to go overboard. Minnesota played the Wizards like 2 weeks ago at home. And it just shows that when this team runs out of answers, they really like implode. And it was a home game, and the crowd started to get antsy and restless, and that was
fans, man, getting a little antsy.
They're trying to make it out of the play-in tournament at that point, and they had no answers for Washington. So I can't imagine what'll happen if the Clippers in the first quarter jump out to a 10-point lead. I don't know what's going to happen with the Wolves, inexperienced team. I'm going to say Clippers, and I'm going to say by over 10.
Karl-Anthony Towns is having a career year. Patrick Beverley's having a career year. Anthony Edwards finally looks healthy again after we brought this up on the podcast. Months of just not looking like himself, very passive. He had a monster dunk the other night, I think against Houston. No, not against Houston. I forget who it was. That being said, We're all in agreement. I got the Clippers. I cannot shake from my mind what I saw last season, which is before Paul George got hurt. There was something very, very, very special about this group. And I actually think that they've gotten better this year. And last year when I watched them play the Suns, I really thought they were going to give the Suns a run for their money. Last year, I actually had, before the Nets got hurt, before the Clippers got hurt, I had Nets-Clippers in the finals. I'm not saying the Clippers can make a magical run again this year. Who knows? It's very unlikely that a team from the, you know, starting in the play-in makes a run all the way to the finals. But they are playing fucking insane basketball. And Paul George is not only healthy, he's like peak Paul George, which I did not expect.
One thing I didn't mention about this matchup, there's not much we can learn from the three times these teams played. The first two games were early in the season. The Clippers won by 11 and 20, respectively. And then the third matchup, the Wolves won by 18, but that was without Paul George. That was in January. The other two matchups were in November. These teams are completely different from them, but it's just – I think that what you were saying about the Wolves' implosion potential and – Harry, you were mentioning, can they make a run from the play-in? Like, what's the status of Ja Morant? Like,
true, that's a great point.
He's been a street clothes Ja, and you know that's tough to get up to speed against some of the dogs that the Clippers have on the perimeter. Not saying that they can stop him or even slow him down, but you know that's going to be interesting. We know that the Grizzlies are a unit, but the Clippers, even without Kawhi, are kind of a unit in terms of the different options they can get to. So that's going to be a fun one. I think it's going to be a sneaky, fun first-round series that can go 6 or 7, if it happens, obviously.
Speaking of dogs, I just wanted to tell the listeners, one dog in the post to look out for the Clippers is Isaiah Hartenstein. This guy's been one of the best backup bigs all year. I think he's going to fucking feast on – Vanderbilt, Towns, whatever. Like this, I don't know, this idea that Minnesota has a solid front court.
Pelicans and Spurs. Harry, how are you leaning in that one?
I got the Spurs. I just checked the injury report. I haven't seen the Spurs much this past week or so because DeJounte Murray's been out. But from what I think Murray's back. I think the Spurs are healthy again. And the Pelicans are – I don't think Zion's coming back, is he? I mean, even if he does, I don't think it's going to matter. I think the Spurs are just a better team.
Yos?
I've got the Pels. I think that ever since the McCollum trade, they've been feisty. I like making sure that all three of those guys are healthy and squared away. I think CJ, Ingram, Valanciunas, Herb Jones, Jose Alvarado, I just like this team, man. They play their asses off. I think that CJ and Ingram are guys, if the game is close, they can get you a bucket. They've got defenders all over. Trey Murphy has really
– yeah, he looks great.
He's been a nice story over the second half of the season, talking about rookies and the depth of this rookie class. They've got three rookies who are contributing in a big way, and they're not guys who – talk about, you know, rookies, can you count on them in the playoffs? When you play defense, the way that these guys play defense – I don't really worry about that, you know, as much. And they've got guys who can carry the slack offensively. I would take, you know, DeJounte is terrific. He's had a career year. Good for him. I'm taking the Pels, though. I think the Pels are my pick in this matchup.
I just want to say, I think one thing to look out for, you just mentioned the Pelicans must play players like CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram. I think one matchup to look out for is like the Spurs guards are on fire right now. Even, you know, you got guys like Josh Primo, a lot of momentum coming into this playing game. You know, I think Lonnie's even had
Lonnie a few Walker
here or there. And obviously DeJounte. So I'm curious to see what they can do, what's going to happen when they go up against like a CJ McCollum, who, you know, historically has been a liability on that end.
Who would you guard, Buckets or Harry, whoever wants to take it? Who do you see guarding Ingram? Ingram's, you know, kind of a mismatch. You know, they've got
Pirtle.
Keldon?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay.
Out of those teams, I think that CJ McCollum is the guy that I this is hard to say because I don't know what DeJounte Murray's going to be in a playoff setting, but CJ McCollum is a guy that I trust the most by far. And that's why I really want to take the Spurs because of Murray, but I'm going to go Pelicans because of CJ. So, Harry, you have Spurs against the Timberwolves. Who would you?
No, I have Spurs Clippers.
Oh, my apologies. Spurs Clippers. Who would you have in that one?
I got the Clippers. I think out of all the play-in teams, and I'm including the Nets here, the Clippers may be the best team out of all these play-in teams. And I say that just because of the Nets' horrendous defense. Like I say that, you know, big grain of salt. I know KD and Kyrie are who they are, but I have the Clippers for sure.
Yos, we have, I believe, the same one, Timberwolves and Pelicans.
No, not Timberwolves. Pels Clippers.
Wait, you guys both – I thought we were all picking the – so you both took the Timberwolves.
No.
We all took the Clippers.
So, Pels Clippers. You said Pels Timberwolves.
Wait a second. So if we all took the Clips, wouldn't you guys have the Wolves in the second matchup versus –
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I forgot how the plan was for like a hot second.
Yep. Timberwolves, Pels. I will go with the. That's a tough one. I like the Pels in that one. Let's go, Pels. Give them hell, Pels.
I'm with you, and I think that would be, that would be peak Minnesota basketball. That would be really depressing after a really, really good season. I think that a lot of Timberwolves fans and people would be saying, oh, they won 46 games. They shouldn't have even been in that situation in the first place, in terms of like, this is unfair for them to be in the play-in game. But honestly, if the Timberwolves can't beat one of these two opponents, I'm sorry. I have no sympathy for you. This is an opportunity to make it in. You're at home in both matchups. If you're good enough, you'll find a way. I don't know if either of you have a disagreement with that, but I know that that's going to happen if they don't make it out of the play-in.
I'll put this qualifier out there. If Gideon gets another haircut in the fourth quarter of the game, then I'll go Timberwolves. If Gideon's in the building, I'm going Wolves. But otherwise, I'm gonna go. Pels.
I love that. I really quickly before we get out of here, I want to touch on what's going on with the Lakers. Overall thoughts, Russell Westbrook situation. Yost, let's start with you. What are your overall thoughts on where the Lakers are headed from here?
I think that the Lakers are going to try like hell to get off of Russell Westbrook, sell him as an expiring contract to teams that have bad money on their books. I think they want to get off of that contract and create enough space to sign Zach LaVine in the offseason, who's a free agent. This is a shitty free agency class. I'm sure we're going to talk about that, two, 3 months down the line after the season's over. Not very many guys to be had. The one guy who is attainable is Zach. I think that he's a guy who could be drawn to the appeal of Los Angeles. That might be a be careful what you wish for situation, because I think that Zach would take a lot of shit that he wouldn't want to take in that spotlight, being the third star in that group. But I think that we talk about at the All-Star break, a lot was made about LeBron hyping up Sam Presti. And there have been theories, though, is he trying to get him to draft Bronny? Is he trying to get Presti to come to the Lakers to take over for Pelinka? What if it's to convince Presti, hey, reunion season, final year of Russ, like bring him back? And I know the case people make is that when you want to develop young talent, do you want Russ to get in the way? But I don't know. I think that there's something there. And if it's not the Thunder, maybe it's the Knicks, maybe it's whoever, but I think they're going to try like heck to get off of Russell Westbrook, and if not, explore buyout options. I think that's their move. I don't see Russell Westbrook on this team next year.
For me, the thing is, with the way that the Vogel situation was handled yesterday, and I don't know how you guys felt about this, it was just kind of – right before the Lakers won the title in the bubble, there was this notion that the Lakers were run like a train wreck, basically. And then all of a sudden, they had a great offseason where they put the right role players together, got Anthony Davis, and then it looked like their front office might know what it was doing. Now it's back to square one of, like, this front office is a mess. And actually, as you were going off on that, Yost, I was reading something on the side here, a notification that I got about Quinn Snyder being – he's a candidate for the Lakers job, and apparently he has now become less interested in the Lakers job because of how that they handled the Vogel firing. So already we're not even into the offseason yet. I guess the Lakers are. But the,
ooh,
the
sick burn, Armand.
The reputation of the Lakers organization is already taking a hit around league circles, and I don't think it's going to get better. I think it's going to get worse. And with that being said, Bill Plaschke wrote an article about Doc
Rivers. Love Plaschke.
He basically said that the Lakers need to hire Doc Rivers. So this is going to get
luck.
It's going to get a lot more fun and a lot more interesting to see what the F the Lakers do, because that organization, they are a couple moves away from, in my mind, screwing themselves for like the next 3 or 4 years, if not longer. Harry, what are your thoughts on the Lakers?
You guys nailed all the future stuff. I just want to just not gloss over the past, which is that when I last saw you guys, the Los Angeles Lakers were on their way to becoming NBA champions, right? The last time I saw you guys is right when COVID was happening. And, you know, as we know, the bubble took place and yada, yada. And I distinctly remember the podcast that we had after they had won the championship. We were talking about a meta shift. We were talking about how the Lakers were going to set the standard for how NBA teams were going to start building themselves, right? What kind of style we're going to see for the next 5 years. And within 2 years, they have completely crumbled to the point where they cannot even make the play-in tournament. And if I had told you that 2 years ago, if I had said, hey, the Lakers just won the championship, parade, blah, blah, blah. What if I told you 2 years from now, hey, I'm from the future, they're not going to make the play-in tournament. What would you say would be the prime reason for that? You'd say, oh, LeBron got hurt. No, LeBron is still 30 points a night, whatever his other numbers are. He's not peak LeBron, but he's still absolutely – you know, we all had him on our all NBA team, right? Like on third team. Yeah. I mean, this guy's still one of the absolute best players in the league, and the Lakers can't win any fucking games. They're so terrible. I just don't want to gloss over that fact, because I can't remember what we did preseason, but I had the Lakers, I think, at least a 3 seed, like at least in that top 3. Home court advantage for sure. I think I had them. I can't remember what you guys said.
I was probably right there with you.
I mean, this has been, I think, by far, in my opinion, this has been by far the most disappointing NBA team I've ever seen. I mean, I don't think the Steve Nash, Dwight, Kobe teams even come close. I mean,
I want to have that conversation because I was thinking about this earlier today. I think that the end of that season was more devastating because of Kobe's injury that basically altered the rest of his career, that Achilles injury he never came back from. And then obviously Dwight leaving, maybe that was a blessing in disguise. That had more ramification for the future, the subsequent season, because of those two situations, and I guess Steve Nash's situation as well. But in terms of pure disappointment for this season, yeah, this is up there. But it's like you look at this roster, and what were we expecting? They completely undervalued Caruso and how special he was to that team. They took I was just about to get into that, where it's like, they took 3 productive role players, flawed, right? They were all on the floor Trez wasn't even on the floor for the first round loss to the Suns last year, but contributing members to that team that was the 7th seed last year. I think that Russell Westbrook has proven for 3 or 4 years that his skill right now is getting stats, and his shooting is just terrific. It's a train wreck. His decision making is as bad, if not worse. And so it's funny you mentioned. I don't remember if you said this on the pod today or if you asked off camera. It's like, did you guys see what Russ said about Frank Vogel. It's like, I don't know what he had against me. It's like, I think that anybody who was in Frank Vogel's situation would have to account for the fact that you can't shoot. You're a bad decision maker. You're not good defensively. And then the rest of this roster is bare bones. We're talking about Malik Monk, Carmelo Anthony, Talen Horton Tucker. They signed him to the extension. He didn't take a step really at all. Austin Reeves is an integral part to this team. This guy's a second round pick. I mean, good for him. He had the double in the, you know, in the final game of the season. But this team's got, you know, no depth. They threw away all of their depth for a guy who is a high usage, inefficient player, which is one of the worst players you can have, making $42 million a week.
Is this really a Westbrook thing, though? I guess maybe. Okay, let me pose a question to you guys.
It's a Westbrook thing and it's a depth thing. But the two things are related because they traded their depth for Westbrook.
I think that's a great way to frame the whole like big picture. But let's like assign like a percentage. Like how much of this season would you blame on Russell Westbrook?
20%.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm over 50. I think a lot of people are like, this is all Westbrook. If you just remove Westbrook from this equation, it's all good. We're going to win a championship again. I'm like, are you fucking crazy? Like, have you, Westbrook doesn't play every minute of every game. Have you seen the minutes that he doesn't play? Spoiler, they're still terrible.
They lack overall talent. And that I think is, and fit. They and there's so many. Yeah. I mean, between injuries, age, coaching decisions by Vogel, the way that the roster was constructed, that would be my number one, the roster construction.
Okay, but the roster construction move that put them in this spot was trading a lot of assets, yeah. Pieces for Russell Westbrook. Kyle Kuzma took a step up. They pigeonholed him into a role when potentially he could have carried more of the load. Maybe he's just a good stats, bad team guy. But it's like his rebounding improved, his defense improved, his shooting improved, and it's just like, you're trading him in addition to letting Caruso go to the Bulls and sign elsewhere on a contract that looks like a steal right now. I guess, you know, Trez, sure. Dennis Schroeder, sure. But, you know, we're talking about five players. I mean, one of the other deals that was out there was Buddy Hield. I think that even like, you know, him in terms of a fit aspect, and maybe you would have been able to get other pieces and not have to give up as much, like, I think Pelinka is the number one guy, and Frank Vogel is the scapegoat here.
What about LeBron? Can I throw him in the ring for a second? Because I feel like LeBron started out his career, first 10 years, we all consensus were like, look, if you're on a team with LeBron, you're going to be a much better player than without. But I feel like over the past half of his career, we've seen a lot of these cases of like, okay, if you leave LeBron's team, your job becomes 10 times easier. I don't know if that's because of who LeBron is as a person. I don't know him. But, you know, you see guys like Kuzma. You see guys like Caruso. You know, you see guys that really are flourishing after they leave the wake of LeBron James. You know, the only guys who's really been able to maximize himself next to him is Kyrie Irving, who is a transcendent superstar offensively.
Yeah.
Kyrie Irving and then the Mike Miller, Shane Battiers of the world. Yeah. Chris Bosh, you know, was able to morph his game to where he was complimentary. And that's more of a credit to Chris Bosh. I mean, Anthony Davis, you know, that people talk about the Mickey Mouse ring and things like that. If the Lakers weren't one of the best teams that I saw during that 1920 season, sure. But it's like that team was a really, really, really good team.
They deserve the ring.
They deserve the ring because they proved it over the course of the regular season. Yes, their path was unconventional or whatever, but that was a really good team. LeBron, in terms of guys being better around, there were no guys for him to optimize on this roster. That's kind of the problem. And I think that if you want to say LeBron, you should have known better than to advocate for Russell Westbrook. And I think, you know, the narrative that I've heard pushed is that LeBron's in year 19. Davis has had his injury issues. They viewed Russ as a spark plug who could get them through the regular season. This guy has been an inefficient chucker who doesn't add anything to your defense. It takes away things from your defense. And when the Lakers are at their best, their defense was what was kind of propelling them. It was offensively where sometimes they, you know, had a tough time, you know, getting great looks, but their defense was able to keep them in it. And, you know, LeBron and AD's playmaking, I mean, Buckets, you said during that season, stop the lobs with the Lakers. You've got them beat, but that defense, it was menacing. And how do you have a defensive identity with Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, and Malik Monk? You can't. So I think it's roster construction. I'm not absolving LeBron of criticism, and I think that what you're saying is fair. But I think that I would hold LeBron responsible to the extent to which he advocated dealing a bunch of these players for Russell Westbrook.
My final question for you guys is, let's assume that the Lakers ran it back. Dennis is back at the point. No Westbrook. So they still had Kuzma, maybe Trez, KCP. And let's say, fine, you give them Malik Monk, Austin Reeves. What seed does that team finish in?
Is Anthony Davis healthy?
Sorry, Harry, what was your question?
Is Anthony Davis healthy for the majority of the season?
We don't know. It's just the players are the same, but Anthony might have still gotten hurt. What do you guys think? Yost, you said better than this one.
Better than this one.
So
they're in at least the playing game.
Okay.
That team had a chance before Anthony Davis got hurt in that Suns game, or in that was it game three, game four? They had a chance to win that series. So better than this one. I'm sorry, Alex Caruso is a better player than Russell Westbrook, and it's not close. Kyle Kuzma is a better player than Russell Westbrook, and it's not particularly close. I think that the team would be in the six to nine range, no pun intended, and would have a puncher's chance at, you know, getting a playing seed, and, you know, would have a chance to, you know, provided, you know, we don't know the health of Ja Morant and Steph Curry going this playoff, they'd have a chance to advance based on that. I think that they'd be in the same spot, and it's just like, Westbrook wasn't it to me.
I'll go higher. I think they're better. I think that team, to me, like theoretically, is better than Utah. I think they're probably one of the best defensive teams in the league. I would put them at like a top five clip as far as defensive teams in the NBA. And I think they'd probably be an average offensive team. But I don't know. The Davis thing is the only thing that gives me pause, because I think he actually, despite getting hurt this year, I think he actually regressed as a player this year as well, especially defensively. I just did not see the same terror that we saw in the NBA Finals during the Asterisk season, where he was everywhere. He was honestly one of the most incredible defensive talents I'd ever seen that season. And I just think he's just not that same level right now.
I'm fascinated to see if he ever regains that level, because I do agree with you. If there's nothing else that you guys have left to say, we're going to do a playoff preview pod in the next day. So can't wait for that. Is there anything else you guys want to say before we get out of here?
MVP, love baby. It. Let's go.
Let's go, Knicks. OB.
OB. What a we need to talk about that tomorrow. What an incredible close of the season for Obi Toppin. Ain't no stopping future Knicks starting power forward, Obi Toppin. I thought
you Tyrese Maxey, baby, most improved player.
All right, we are out of here.